Welcome to the Quest Podcast, proudly presented by the Muscular Dystrophy Association as part of the Quest family of content. I'm your host, Mindy Henderson. Together, we are here to bring thoughtful conversation to the neuromuscular disease community and beyond about issues affecting those with neuromuscular disease and other disabilities and those who love them. We are here for you to educate and inform, to demystify, to inspire, and to entertain. We are here shining a light on all that makes you, you. Whether you are one of us, love someone who is, or are on another journey altogether, thanks for joining. Now let's get started. With some heaviness in the world right now, I wanted to have a conversation today with a gentleman who always makes me feel a little more joyful after I spend time with him. And I have no doubt that you will also come away feeling good about life and the world with a little extra pep in your step and motivation. So today I am bringing you a conversation with a gentleman I am proud to call my friend, Jess Westman. He is a 25-year-old actor, disability activist, writer and composer, comedian, and human person, he says in that order. Having grown up on stage, Jess took the leap from West Texas to New York City in 2021 to pursue a professional career in the arts. Today, he is involved with the Second City Improv, the Grammy Award-winning Brooklyn Tabernacle, and hosts the all-new comedy podcast, This Podcast Just Might Change Your Life. I'm counting on it, Jess, which will be streaming everywhere starting on March 31st. He also has many musical projects in the works, and if that weren't enough, he's working on an upcoming musical comedy album. Holy cow, Jess, when do you sleep? Let's start with that.
That was the nicest thing I've ever heard about myself. You're an amazing person. Thank you for having me, Mindy. Wow.
Thank you so much for being here. Clearly, you are a busy person. And so I really appreciate you having a conversation with me and sharing, no pressure, but sharing, you know, some wisdom and wit with our listeners. So I'm going to jump right in and start pummeling you with questions. So like I said, you do all the things. You're a singer, writer, composer, actor, and more. Can you tell us a little bit about just how you got started in the entertainment world? I mentioned in the opening that you grew up on stage, but have you always known you wanted to be a performer?
Oh, boy. Okay, well, those are big shoes to fill. You just set up this beautiful episode. I'm going to try.
You got this.
Well, I think when it came to performing, it was kind of like there wasn't really a choice to my parents. I think I'm really blessed to have had and still have supportive parents who sort of didn't know much about muscular dystrophy, but they knew that we probably wouldn't have sports late in our teens, so why would they give it to us early on, you know, just to deal with that grief of, oh, I can't play football anymore, but that's all I've known. So they immediately, you know, put us in costumes on stage, and I was, man, there's this tragic home video of me doing zippity-doo-dah in an audition. Ooh, for High School,
wow,
Music.
Okay.
2006. And you have my brother singing angelically, zippity-doo-da, like just amazing. And then I go, zippity-doo-da, zippity-a.
And as one does, yes.
One actually shouldn't do, but I did lots of finger guns as a kid, like, eh,
nice.
Eh. And I think I kind of just developed a brand of carefree, fun performance. And so any character I did growing up, it was less about, I think, especially growing up, it was less about becoming a character and more about just escaping the realities of life. And I have this disease. I don't know what it's going to mean one day, but I'm just going to go full speed ahead into this stuff and distract myself as healthy people do. We distract ourselves with putting on costumes.
That's...
I love that. I think everyone should do that. And, you know, and I think to, as you're not to make light of what you're saying, you know, I think that part of how we get through life, and that, because nobody has, I don't think, at least I haven't met them yet, someone with an easy life. We all have our challenges. And so I think we all find those ways to, you know, distract ourselves, like you say, and, you know, find the lightness where we can. Is that a word? Lightness?
Lightness. It's good.
Okay. If it's not, it's going to be now. So one, and we should mention also, if you don't mind, you live with Becker muscular dystrophy, correct?
I do.
Okay. How old were you when you were diagnosed?
I was 6 months old. So all I knew, like until I was like five, maybe, was that I'm different, but they're not going to say to a 6 month, okay, now say muscular. No, it wasn't like that.
Yeah.
Just sort of grow up with it, and then you sort of learn the medical term as time goes on.
Okay, fair enough. So back to the fun stuff.
Yes.
One of your most well-known projects, and the project that helped us get acquainted, is the musical Wheels, which you wrote, composed. I'm in awe of the talent. Can you tell us a little bit more about how that play came about?
Sure. It's funny to jump from like adolescence, figuring it out, you know, stuffing my pain down, to then talking about my pain. Like a lot of people listening might ask, like, how do you like even get there? Like what was that, sort of what was going through my head? To be honest, nothing really was, other than, you know, just jump onto the stage and forget about what's going on. But you get to a point, you're jumping onto the stage so much that you actually have, there are physical ramifications with this disease, like to where you can't like not think about it. And I think especially late teens, people know with Becker, late teens, early 20s, that's when it gets real. And it's being the psychological demon of like, this will happen. And it starts happening. And I think when that happens, people pendulum swift like crazy. Swift. Did I say pendulum swift? Shift.
Sure. Yes.
I don't know what I said, but Taylor Swift, she's great. That's not who I'm talking about. Okay, pendulum shift. And they just go back and forth between, you know, being open about it, not wanting to talk about it, being, you know, there's just so many places to go with it. But I decided when it became really real, kind of developed a limp when I was like around 19, performing all the time. I decided like, why not talk about it? Just in a musical, because I'm not normal. I don't know if you can tell, Mendy. I'm not a normal person.
I don't think I've met many normal people. What is normal, really?
What is normal? That's a good This episode, what is normal? Because we're trying to find out. It's not, it doesn't exist. But I just decided, I love the whimsy behind, you know, musicals in general. They elevate life, they dramatize life. And I would always come home in middle school with a story about a teacher. And I always said one more punchline than was actually like had that day. There was like one more funny thing the teacher did that actually didn't happen. I'm confessing to being a liar. I'm a liar. That's what I'm saying. But no, I think growing up in theater, you learn to like just put more plot behind some.
Agreed. Yes, you dramatize actual events,
For fun, you know?
Yeah.
And so I was like, let me translate that to something serious. And I had written a lot of goofy stuff. I had thought, okay, I'm going to be a talk show host. I'm going to be a comedian. This is all I'm going to be. But this stuff just felt, it felt like it was put on my heart. So I had to do it. I love that I, 5 minutes into my answer about Wheels, and I haven't talked about Wheels. I'm going to get there. I'll just say it was necessary to talk about it. Felt necessary to talk about it.
Yeah.
So I wrote about it. We put on like a tri-collegiate version of Wheels, the first iteration in 2021. I was a senior in college. We got support from the National Theater Organization, the Alpha Psi Omega organization, and we've got support connected. I got connected with MDA.
I have to say, I had the incredible pleasure of seeing sort of a what's the right word for it? It was kind of a preview of Wheels. What's the word I'm looking for?
Yeah, we had a professional reading at the Drama League in 2023.
Yes. And I was incredibly honored to be there. And I'm not gonna lie, I was a little put out with you because I watched it and it was the first time that I had ever seen people who look like me on any kind of stage for the purpose of entertainment, you know, in a play, in a musical, in a movie. And it reduced me to tears. And, you know, and because it was beautiful and it was so well done. You sang a couple of songs that touched my heart and looked into my soul and how I've experienced life. And it was the first time that I felt so seen and so understood by someone like yourself who is there to entertain. And you had asked me, you had done me the honor of asking me to moderate a panel afterward, which I was so happy to do. But I was, you know, tear stained, and, you know, it was such a moving experience. And then to go on to try to ask intelligent questions of yourself and the other panelists after that was a tall order. But I was so grateful, and I just wanted to share the power of that moment and that experience for our listeners, because you've done all of us such a service by creating something like Wheels.
Okay. God bless you. Thank you. That was, you give me these hefty, I don't even know how to respond. That's so beautiful. It blessed me that you were even there. And
thank you.
Having, you know, just known who you were, I read your stuff. I was just really excited that you would even come. And you and, you know, Mary Fiance, part of MDA, and Keith Gordon, he's an associate, he works with them. And like, I couldn't believe these incredible, like, I call you guys fighters, because that's what you gotta be these days, especially, but you are, and you're on the front lines of like justice and kindness and love. And so I was, honored. I just want people to like feel like they missed out by not being there. I guess that's
what I know.
We're doing.
I think we've accomplished that for sure. And if they are feeling that way, I'm going to put it out into the ether that I hope they will get the chance to see it. So let's talk a little bit more about that. So as a playwright, is that the right word for something that's a musical and a play? Is playwright still
play,
the right
yeah.
term?
As long as it's before human person.
Okay.
Yeah.
Perfect. So you have been through, you know, you and I have continued to talk and you've kept me up to date, but you've been through some iterations of Wheels. Can you tell me a little bit about how it's evolved?
Yeah, absolutely. If you're a writer, you're listening to this, you know, it's like, I finished it. No, you didn't. you think you did, and you finished a version of it, but never say, I finished the script, because the script, even when you could have the most published thing, you're going to rewrite it. There's always going to be something to fix and change. But to me, that's what has improved the material over time, is the willingness to change and adapt. Like, for example, what you saw in 2023, which is exactly 2 years after the first version, couldn't have been more different. The through line that was similar was, this guy has muscular dystrophy, but nothing, not a single plot point aligned with the initial version, besides maybe a character saying hello, which I think did happen. There was not a lot of crossover. And to me, it's actually, looking back from 2023, I can't pinpoint a lot that is the same from even then, which might sound horrible because you really enjoyed 2023. So I'm not like I'm, you know, knocking down those trees that made you cry and gave people life that night. But it's just that I'm finding new trees to plant. I'm going with the plant metaphor.
I like it. It works.
it just genuinely, you know, every version has gotten closer and more true to my experiences as I age with this disease. Now, if I was just this person who, you know, I didn't age and the disease didn't change, then the show probably would change a whole lot less. But as I've grown up and as it's affected me more, I've learned so much more. So I think it's probably going to be prime wheels, you know, much further from right now. But I think I'm also giving myself the space to accept that and be ready for what my life becomes and what the show becomes at the same time.
Yeah. So I don't know if this is a fair question right this second, but I'm going to ask it anyway. And then there are so many other things to talk about. You've got 1,000 other projects you're working on. So I definitely want to move on to those. But is there a particular message that's important to you that people who may get to see Wheels at some point that they come away with? Or is it multiple messages? What are your thoughts there?
I mean, a core message for those, you know, individuals with muscular dystrophy watching it, any version they have seen or will see, I think, is that your pain, your struggle, as people don't like to say, but it's true, it very much can be that as you age, is not in vain. These experiences you have, they're not in vain. These will grow you if you let them. Adversity can grow us. You know, I meet people who have this, and for some reason, they're some of the happiest people I've met, some of the most content people I've met. Mm-hmm. Because I think something about knowing how hard, impossible, actually, that life can be, makes you really enjoy, you know, the little things. And so, yeah, maybe. Oh no! Now I'm having like 5 different answers for this. Okay, I gotta stay on one track.
It's okay.
Maybe just, you know that your experiences aren't in vain and there are other people that can relate to you. And it's going to sound cliche and it's going to sound very musical theater. Circa 2010s, you're not alone.
Yeah. So, you know. I think those are fine answers. I love those answers. And I think that those are good reasons to do what you're doing. So, and by the way, I think you're accomplishing those things. So, as someone living with a disability, let's just talk about the entertainment industry, which from what I've heard, no matter who you are, I think it's a tough industry to crack. But as someone living with a disability, how do you feel your disability has affected your journey in the entertainment industry? What have the barriers been that you've had to overcome?
Well, I think we'll definitely get more into this soon, but the subway, that was, you know, when you pursue a career in something like this, you move to a big city, you move to a city that probably isn't really set up for someone with a disability. Not just that, someone who's like half and half. A friend of mine jokes, he's also disabled, so I can say it. He jokes that I'm demi-disabled, so like, oh, a demi. But because I am.
For people who don't know you, you're ambulatory. You
ambulatory.
Walk, but yeah.
Yeah, demi-disabled. It might be one of the worst things I could have said. I'm so sorry.
I might have to steal it. I don't know.
Okay, yeah, maybe steal. But and so I'll give an example. After a long day rehearsing, paying for the rehearsal space out of pocket with these actors, you know, for 6 hours sheet music I spent, you know, 24 hours with beforehand, just getting it perfect to the day that I had set up for everyone to show up, whatever. I get on the subway and I just want to sit down. Then I told you this story. I did.
I want to hear it again. I love this story.
I'll tell it again.
Yeah.
Try to tell.
It's going to sound weird that I love this story, but
it actually kind of messed up that you love this story.
It is a little bit messed up. So now we're equally twisted, I think. So, but yeah, it resonates with me that when you tell this story.
Sure. I'm sure there's many out there who probably had many worse experiences. I count myself I'm thankful that I have had not too many of these, but when it happens, you never forget it. It was, you know, there's a section of the subway that says persons with disabilities. Of course, that's never really honored. You know, and on a lot of cars, there aren't people with disabilities. You know, I'll say that. But on the carts where there are, you know, you walk on and or you roll on. And that was one of those days where I felt like just like I could just explode. Like my legs, my back, my right knee, like just you're thinking about all that stuff. And so you just want to sit down. And so I was going to, you know, take a seat. And basically what happens is you have a random stranger assuming that, you know, you're not disabled. And so someone says, excuse me, you're not disabled. And it's so interesting because I think this is actually the point of the story. I didn't like yell at them. I didn't scream at them. Mm-hmm. I assumed that identity, that I'm not disabled. I just accepted it, even though it wasn't true. I didn't want to fight it. And I think that's what we had talked about in the talk back. Yeah. I didn't want the conflict, any more conflict than there already was with being seen as the guy who's, you know, pretending to be disabled, isn't disabled, but actually is disabled.
Well, and to stand there and argue with her about the fact that actually I am, you know, I can't help but, and I think that, yeah, I think that that's what I like about this story is, you know, the sort of conundrum that you found yourself in and the strength that you had to find in yourself to stand there, not that this is right, but to stand there and take the not the criticism. What word am I thinking of? To sort of
the heat, maybe
the heat. Of and you know, rather than do what you needed for yourself, you know, which was probably to defend yourself and you know find a way to get to sit down. You did the much, you know, you stood there and you took it. And I think that that's something that all of us can relate to because we've all felt, you know, our own form of prejudice and, you know, discrimination and judgment and that sort of thing. And, you know, you made a choice in that moment to stand there and not argue with this woman and, you know, face how exhausted your body was and power through it despite the judgment that was being made against you.
Right. And that is, I've learned that lesson since, you know, times of adversity, it can seem like you'll get all the power in the world back if you fight back or if you use, you know, if you bully back the bully, you know, whatever scenario it is, whether it's a person or a situation, whatever it is. But I found there's actually no power in that. Vengeance doesn't really have power in it. It has passion. But to me, it's not actually anything that'll help you or benefit you. And I've found the best thing I could do in moments like that is either, it's gonna sound crazy, pray for that person or write about it. And
yeah.
put all of that effort into something that can actually make the world a better place. In fact, I was thinking about this today, that as opposed to criticizing, you know, people we hate or hating people in general, like there's something we can do to combat that, which is to spread joy with our lives and mm-hmm. spread awareness and educate people that way, because people aren't going to listen to I hate you. People aren't going to listen to you know, you're the worst and I will never be in the same room with you. People are going to listen to, well, here's where you're wrong. This is, you know, this is who I am. So to me, it's like, you're not fighting fire with fire. You're fighting fire. Oh, it's going to sound like I'm a Care Bear fighting fire with love, but
yeah,
like a Care Bear.
And I think that that's one of the beautiful things about art and entertainment is that it's a platform to share those pieces of ourselves where maybe people are in a lot of cases going to be a little more inclined to listen and to hear it and receive it. You know, they're not always going to hear you in the moment say, actually, you're wrong. You know, maybe they will. Some people will, and there's a time and a place, I'm sure, to say those things. But I think what you do, you know, this passion that you're living for art and entertainment, there's a lot of power behind that and so much opportunity, I think, to teach people new things and expose them to things maybe they haven't been exposed to before. Like, so
prove them wrong with your life, not yeah. with your, you know, with the art you create. And in time, you know, you don't have to get the satisfaction of seeing if they changed. You just have to hope that they could and that more people could, and that you're making work that makes people self-reflect. And I would hate to make art that doesn't teach people anything, even if yeah. it's a lesson. It's, I think art should convey some sort of educational value for someone. I feel like that's necessary.
Yeah, could not agree more. So you have also shared with me that some of what you've experienced as someone living with Becker, as well as just life experiences recently, have caused you to pivot in your career and focus your energies and your talents on comedy right now, which I love. You're a natural for comedy. What motivated you to make that change?
Well, one, in middle school, I was told I had a face for comedy because girls would laugh. They would just laugh at it. Oh, I know, it hurts. No, that didn't happen. But
I didn't think so.
That was an example. But I'm the liar. That's the through line. That's the title. Jess is a liar. That's the title.
That's good. I'm going to make that the title of the episode.
Please and thank you.
Okay.
You know, I think what I mentioned before about Wheels, like, it's a story that's being written as my life unfolds. Yeah. So that is just a fact that it was a hard pill to swallow, but it was great to accept it, because I think in doing so, I'm not going to write about an experience I don't have yet. So the previous iterations, I'll address this. I was writing about a fully disabled man. So at the, I was essentially writing 40-year-old Jess into a 20-year-old character, but I wasn't considering that, because that's not my experience, maybe I could be falsely conveying, you know, or just, and with an inexperience, not really speaking on something I truly understand and uh-huh. full lived. So
that
and
makes that so much sense.
Yeah, thank you. And a lot of people actually didn't, you know, they would disagree and they'd be like, Jess, it's not that big of a deal. Personally, to me, it's a big deal. And I, not just do I want people with muscular dystrophy to be writing about people with muscular dystrophy, but also the experiences of how the muscular dystrophy affects you. There's someone that has the same thing, but it affects them differently. It's hard for me to speak exactly for them. So that's where I put myself in the place of, okay, you can have more time for that. Here's when the answer gets kind of funny. I met Conan.
Yes. I was hoping this would come up. Conan O'Brien, right, is who you're referring to.
Comedian Conan O'Brien, who just won the Mark Twain Award for American humor, and who is he's like a dad to me. Okay, I do have a dad, by the way. By the way, Dad, if you're listening, you are my dad, and I acknowledge that. Mm. But I met Conan, and spur of the moment, okay, so there was a person next to me, and they were like, bro, when Conan comes out, don't ask him a question, and don't make it about you. So as soon as Conan comes out, I said, Conan, will you adopt me?
And that feels great.
So I asked him a question, and I made it about me.
Perfect.
And I was like, let's see what happens. Thankfully, we riffed. He said something about he'd have to talk to his lawyer and his kids, but it should be all right. And in that moment, I was like, it wasn't like a flip switched, but I was like, my mouth was dry, as it is when you meet your hero, and your mouth is dry, your hands are shaking, you're like, my neck hurts. Did that just happen? And then someone afterward came up to me and was like, just asking me if I do stand up. And I kind of expressed, you know, reluctance for that, because it's scary. Yeah. but also so was that. And it happened. Yeah. And it, you know, it could have gone worse. And so I looked into it. And by look into it, I mean, I did stand up. As soon as I got back home from that, I did stand up.
What? 18
in a row. 18 days in a row.
I didn't know that.
Night, twice a day, almost, sometimes.
Oh, and, my gosh.
And so much that I got a headliner spot in July at this place. I bombed that. I got another one. I succeeded. I got another one, half succeeded. And I just kept going and going and going. And then I stopped. I was just like, okay, I think I've learned a lot from this. Let me take a breather because this is not healthy. All right. I was out to like 2 a.m. You socializing with these comedians and I have work in the morning. So what am I doing? So I took a step back. But from that, I learned, wait a second. While I have this hesitancy of the timeline of Wheels, not really knowing what that looks like, in the meantime, I'm like, I love banter. I love making people laugh. I love heck, being laughed at. I don't care. Like, if you're laughing at me or with me, we're having fun. And so I was like, is there an element of that that I can more so incorporate into my my personal journey? And, you know, that's where Happenstance, which I'll talk about, comes in. That's where this podcast comes in. But I think it was also, I had this moment in January that was sort of this life or death moment. My heart was enlarged. I was in the hospital. I didn't think I'd make it through the night. And I believe that God performed a miracle, and just me seeing the next day and what that looked like. And I knew I had a second chance for a reason. I didn't really understand what for. And for me, it's like, what is joy if not just laughter with the people you love? That, I mean, it's just, that's pure joy. And so I thought, this is an opportunity to go that direction. And I'll say this as a huge disclaimer, not abandon Wheels, but take the time to understand what it looks like as I grow as a human person. So
I love that. I love that, which kind of dovetails into this next question, which I think you've partially answered, if not fully answered, but I'm going to ask it anyway. Why do you think that comedy is good for the soul?
Do we have 3 hours to unpack this?
We have 2 hours and 59 minutes, not quite 3 hours.
I can make that work.
Okay.
I can do this. Why is comedy good for the soul? Or how? Was it why or how?
Why, but how is also good.
How would be 3 more hours.
Okay. You go with whichever one you're feeling drawn to.
Why? Because life is short, man. I don't know, because, I mean, wouldn't it be devastating if we just all sat here crying the whole time? I don't know. Why is comedy so important? Because it's priceless, because it can't be traded for anything in the world. A good laugh with your mom. A good laugh with your best friend that's known you for 10 years. You're roasting each other because that's how you express your love for each other. I mean, come on. I can't even put to words like how important to me comedy is. And if people were looking for a funny answer in that actually, I think a funny answer would not do it justice. Yeah. Comedy is so necessary. Okay, fine, I'll bring it back to Conan. He was talking about Mark Twain, and he was talking about just the importance of comedy and like, Mark Twain didn't punch down. He wasn't a bully. You know, there's so much about who he was. And the point of comedy, I don't think, is to punch down. I think it's to give people an escape, you know, not to remind people of what is broken within them, what's wrong with them, but to maybe just have a good time. That's it. Here's my 3 hour answer.
I love that answer. And I think that you nailed it, because so much, I mean, I said it at the top of the show, you know, there's so much about life that's just heavy. And I think, I'm not a doctor, I just play one on my podcast, but, you know, I think that there are physiological things also that happen within us when we laugh. And I feel like, I don't know, this may be a negative attitude, but I feel like it's easier to look around you and find things to to pick apart, and you can always find something to feel bad about and to get hung up on. And I think you have to work a little bit harder. Correct me if you think I'm wrong, but you know, I think you have to work a little bit harder to find the light spots and the things to laugh at and things to smile about. And if there's someone like you with a gift who can give us those things, I think it's really important.
Yeah, I mean, I echo what you said. I actually don't know how much I could add to that. I know you have more wisdom and experience, but like, I have learned that, you know, the brightest days come after the darkest ones, and it's only once we're able to laugh at a situation, laugh at ourselves, you know, laugh through the pain, I guess. So I've, you know, why was Conan my hero? Actually, maybe the title will be about Conan in some way. it was because I would have a hard day getting bullied when I was 15, and home and see this guy doing a weird string dance and had this confidence, and he had a goofy haircut and he was tall and he had technically every reason to get made fun of in my school, but he was a hero to them and he was the guy. And so I saw that and I thought, I'd love to have that reckless abandon. I'd love to walk into a room and not care so much of the way I'm coming off, to just spread joy. And if it's perceived and a negative way, if it's perceived in a, oh, he's not as good as he thinks, who cares?
Yeah.
I don't live for you. I used to, but I can't anymore. I don't think I'd have a reason to live if I just lived for the approval of others anymore. So.
Well, and I think, you know, that's where your wisdom is showing a little bit, you know, and as you grow and get older and wiser and all of that, I think that's what's going to make wheels. It's going to take it from great to mind-bogglingly astonishing, you know, because you're going to be able to incorporate wisdoms like this. I mentioned earlier that you're taking improv classes at the esteemed Second City Improv, which is notorious for training actors who have gone on to perform on like Saturday Night Live, you know, a little show people may have heard of. Can you tell us a little bit about the school, the classes you're taking, and what your comedy and acting goals are?
Of course, Mindy with the loaded questions. I can do this. Okay, Second City, I always wanted to do it. Of course, I knew, you know, that's what started Steve Carell's career. So many, you know, Tina Fey, so many of my heroes.
Yeah.
So I'd always had interest. I always knew what it was. I also never wanted to move to Chicago or Toronto or LA. Those were, you know, financial impracticalities. Then I moved to New York for the musical. Still not thinking comedy is going to play a relevant part in my life. And then, you know, stuff transpires this past year. And I really just felt like, why would I not? Why would I not? Because I'm scared, because I'm a little coward, because the same guy who wouldn't do this is the same guy who wouldn't ask Conan to be his father. So
there you go.
And I think I've proven to myself and to God, as God is my witness, that I can be that guy. So why would I not? Just take the leap. Just go for it. Just take a jump. So I did. I signed up. And I have, I can't say this enough. And I found out it's possible. One, yes, Mom, I do believe that there are people funnier than me. Okay? She thinks, and I have my big head. And I'm like, no, I'm not that big. These people, I cry. I cry laughing. They hurt my sides. I think I need rib surgery after I'm done laughing. These people I've been in classes with are so funny. I mean, I'm looking at literally in class with the next Lisa Kudrow, the next Jason Sudeikis. I'm not even joking. And some of them, they go right from that to the comedy club to pitch new material that they tried out, you know, in a scene. And so I can like very clearly say, I don't know why. No. I am stupid for not doing this earlier. That's what I, you know, like every time I walk in, like, I'm mad at teenage me for not just moving to, you know, Chicago. Now, of course, for context, they opened the New York location 2024. So this was not an option until that point, which is just crazy to me because it's like right by where my favorite spot was. Where I used to come the first 3 years and I'd sit at the beach and I'd think, what is my purpose? I'm going to stare at this river and listen to, you know, Mumford and Sons in my AirPods.
Bang the bongos. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And just do that, you know, I'm a lone wolf, I'm figuring things out thing. Mm-hmm. And it's right in that area. And now I have a reason to go there. Before, I'd go there just to be like this hopeless wanderer, Mumford and Sons song. But now it's like, I have class and we do jams, which are like these, it's basically stand up or open mic for improv. And you jump up there. And the craziest thing that happened with this, and then I'm done. I'll get off my soapbox, my improv box about this. But the craziest thing was we had this orientation, this jam, if you will, with like, 200, 300 students, people just there. And the guy I was sitting next to, believe it or not, we met. We were playing the same show like 3 months before. He's this ex-military stand-up comedian, hilarious guy. Doesn't seem like he's funny. But he kills it. He's the funniest guy on earth.
Oh, wow. And
we met. We reconnected. He goes on stage. The first, like, game they're playing, I went to. And I remember as I got up, you're, no. Sit back down. But there's literally, they're all watching you. You're establishing yourself either as the guy who fails or doesn't.
Oh,
to me, there are either two ways. There's two ways to go with improv. You land it. So we're talking, I think the game was... go up and like bad occupations. So you go up and you pretend to be someone who's bad at their job. So they said, doctor. I was like, no, that won't be good enough. Troll. I'm like, troll's not an occupation. I don't. It's not good. And then they said therapist. And I didn't even think. I just walked forward. Please don't die is all I thought. Don't digest. Don't explode and die. And they said therapist. I said, and remember, it's bad therapist. I said, I stared for like 10 seconds. I looked like I was about to cry. And I said, but you didn't ask me how my day was. Because I guess a lot of people have had bad therapists. They didn't just laugh. They cheered. I felt in that moment, wait a second. I don't even think it was that good. I don't even think it was that good. I literally think this is just confirmation that I'm in the right place. I realized you don't have to say the funniest thing. Just say the first thing, the most exciting thing.
Uh-huh.
And you can't.
The realest thing.
The realest thing. And it is real. I can imagine that a narcissistic therapist, not saying all of them are, I'm sure there could be some narcissistic therapists that are thinking the whole time, oh, I wish I could talk about myself. Oh, why aren't they asking me about me? All right. I'm sure there are therapists that think that. I don't know which ones do, but they're out there. So there's a relatability factor. And I've found that, like, the funniest stuff often isn't funny because it's just, you know, out of this world. Oh, blah, blah, blah. You know, it's funny because it's true. And it's true.
First of all, that story gave me goosebumps because the punchline was so good and the cheering. But when you were setting the stage and talking about having to get up and do this, I was sweating and feeling nauseous and trying to imagine this. And my hat is off to you, sir, because I couldn't do it.
Well, my mom, she was the one who heard the before and after. So she heard, I don't know, mom, I don't know. But, and then after, we're good. Yeah. And just completely different people. But that's how tantalizing it is. It's like, this in front of all these people that I don't know.
Yeah. So it's like walking a tightrope without a net. It's, you know,
exactly.
The suspense, you had me with the suspense of that story. And I am eternally more grateful than I already was that I will never have to do that in my life.
Do it. I don't recommend it, but it's this weird, I have a loathing about it because, but once you do it, it's like, okay, I should have been doing this the whole time. It's that thing about adversity.
Well, you should have.
What's up?
I probably should not, but you should have.
No, so. You'd be great. This is improv right now. People don't understand. If you have a good conversation, that's improv. I'm just saying.
You're very kind. That's I will give you that. That's true. So I want to get into the other projects that you have that you're working on right now. But before I do that, we talked a little bit, and you kind of went down this road, but I want to revisit it because number one, I want to know the answer to this. And so there have got to be other people out there that want to know the answer. So we talked about pivoting and change and, you know, how you made this decision to go with comedy and make that your focus right now. And you said it, I think sometimes we grow the most when we pivot. How do you know though, when it's time to pivot or change course, or if you just need to stick with your path that you're already on and work through the problems?
Well, I think I felt called. I really did feel called to comedy, and I have my whole life, but it wasn't like this unfamiliar thing. I had been down that route. Before the genesis of Wheels, it was just performance, you know, musical theater and comedy. That was it. And I think it was taking a leap in one way, because it was revisiting something, but in another way, it was like, I felt like I was just upgrading into prime Jess. I don't know.
Ah.
I'm not a superhero, but I feel like prime Jess, or closer to him. Now that I'm doing this, I feel like I'm doing the right thing. And I feel
that's
like
telling.
Yeah, it may be. I don't know if I come off more at ease or happy or whatever, but I just feel like, yeah, Wheels will be ready for me.
Yeah. And I'll
for Wheels. But it's not like I just woke up one day and said, I'm gonna be funny now. I'm gonna learn how to do. I have been messed up in the head like this since birth. I have always been like this. That's why I mentioned the video. I mean, we're talking about a seven-year-old who does finger guns all the time. Like, not just like people are like having serious conversations, and I'd be, yeah, like to everyone. I thought I was pranking them. There's not a prank has to have a punchline. I would just do this and think I was pranking people. So in that, the silliness has always been a part of my life. If you know me personally, you'll know, even during my most serious Wheels years, I didn't take myself too seriously and always tried to have fun.
Yeah.
So I think I'm just really doing what I feel like I've always been doing, just like pursuing it in my art now as well. And I think there is also going to be more to Wheels and more nuance to that story once I've lived a more, you know, fulfilled life doing this. I think I'm going to learn a lot more than I would have if I just sat, you know, wallowing in the changes that are happening, which are inevitable. My body is changing. I am losing strength, but why would I just focus on that hopelessly when I can have some fun with life and the good things that are going on, right?
Yeah, and bring joy and happiness to the people around you. I like that.
Yeah, so, I attempt to do that. Yes.
Yeah, yeah. So tell me a little bit, and I want to cry because we're almost out of time, but I have just a couple of more questions for you. Talked earlier about how you've got like 8,000 other projects going on. You've got a comedy album in progress that I need to know more about that, and anything else that you would like to talk about that you're currently working on.
Of course. Oh, happenstance time. I'm about to become insufferable.
Oh dear.
Let's do this.
Gotta go.
Gotta go. Yeah. No, we have, you said 2 hours and 59 minutes.
We do. There's time. Go for it.
Let's go. So we got, okay. Happenstance. A reverent odyssey of life and Jess, because death is not an option. That is the full title, because death is not an option, parentheses, of course.
I like it.
Thank you. It doesn't play well anywhere. I don't think anyone likes a title that long. So there is an acronym for it. I'm not going to try to find it right now, because that would take a while. H-T. No, no. See, I'm already doing.
Yeah, you have to think way too hard.
Yes, but it's happenstance. It's a tale of tragedy and joy and grace and mercy and family and love. It's basically a story about
it. Wow.
I grew up, you know, just very unseriously. And I had very serious parents. I had very serious circumstances, but I made a lot of silly decisions and, you know, costable decisions. I'm infamous in my hometown for wrecking cars. I'm a very expensive person. I would get hit by cars and then I also hit a car and I had bad car luck. So just things happen in adolescence that I think taught me a lot. The main sort of through line of the story is I was heavily bullied as a kid. Mm. And then, you know, later in high school, I kind of became a bully, you know, trying to take that power back. And then I think Wheels was my sort of my pendulum swing. And really coming back to a place of empathy and not thinking about justice for me being bullied and all that, but more so thinking, okay, what is thoughtful to do? What is thoughtful to say? What is caring? It sounds like I'm describing a psychopath trying to adjust to being normal, but
not at all, because I don't think a psychopath has it in them. So okay. I think you're good. Yeah.
Okay. Thank God. So I really, happenstance was on my heart when I was in the hospital. I didn't know what it was called, but I knew it was something funny. Yeah. And I knew it was something real, and I knew it was something to establish myself as an artist before Wheels ever hit like the biggest stage it could be on. So that's the idea of happenstance, is this is my story. You'll never get this hour and 15 minutes back, but maybe you'll be okay with that because it's real, it's honest, people can relate to it and people can sympathize. People can, you know, be frustrated with me. You know, I really, it's a human story. And I think it is, this answer's too long. That's what I think. So, yeah.
No, you're good. I'm so excited to hear about this. So a couple of follow-up questions.
Please.
Number one, do you have a timeline? Which I know can be an artist's nightmare to ask that question. But do you have a timeline, and where would someone find something like this when it's finished?
Of course. Timeline. So it's very humorous. We've done a few promos out in the ether, and I bring a microphone to different parts of New York. I was by the Brooklyn Bridge the first time, went to Times Square. Second time, you know, Manhattan area. And I asked people, what are you looking for in a new comedy album? And I've already written a lot of it, so I'm not even going to use this stuff. But I just like to ask for promo's sake. But we went around, and it's actually October 1st, 2024 was the first release date I ever put out. And about 4 days after that, we didn't release it. Instead, I went on the street and asked people how they felt about me as an artist because I didn't release it when I said I would. And guess most answers were like roasting me, just completely destroying me, which I found hilarious. So that's a long way to say 2025. That's all I'll say.
Fair enough. It builds the suspense.
Yes, exactly. And it could potentially be the December 31st, 2025. I'm telling you, 2025. That's all I will say right now.
Okay.
Can they release it everywhere you stream music? But also in your heart.
Okay. Well, keep us posted. I definitely want to have a listen when it is available. Any other projects that you want to mention?
Well, I don't know if this is a project, like something you write, but I do have a podcast.
Yes.
Yes. But I don't know if we were going to speak about that.
Yeah, go right ahead. Let's talk about the podcast.
I'll be so quick. I'm plugging endless stuff.
I love it. Let's do that.
This podcast just might change your life. Listen to it. Bam. That's all I got.
Okay. That's all
podcast.
Brilliant. That's enjoy. End of March. Yeah.
March when it'll... 1st.
Okay. Anywhere you can listen to podcasts?
Everywhere you listen to podcasts. And you guessed it, also in your heart.
Love it.
Yes.
Okay.
Mendy will, there may be an episode with Mendy. It could be.
Maybe, maybe not. I don't know. We'll have to see.
I don't like the suspense. It scares me.
See, it works both ways. I could do suspense too, but I hope so. I'll just say that. So let's do this. Let's talk about, I've said it a couple of times, the world is a bit heavy right now. What advice would you give to listeners who might need some more joy, laughter, levity in their lives right now?
So I wrote down an answer for this because I really want to be sincere, but I also think sincerity is just the truth of what's inside, you know, something you have to do. I really think that we need each other. I think seeing people less as an enemy and more as an opportunity
to,
you know, forgive, move forward. I mean, I really don't, that's easy for me to say, forgive. But I really do believe like there is a lot of hate ever. It's, on all fronts. And I, especially obviously decisions are being made that are affecting people with disabilities, people, you know, my kids' futures, my future kids. And I know there are people scared about that. There's equal, if not more amount of people that are happy about that. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what is, so I think what is alarming is people aren't willing to meet on the divide. People aren't willing to talk to each other. I think we should be talking to each other more. I think we should be listening more. I think, you know, I, as a man, as a person, I follow the teachings of Jesus very closely, just how he loved everyone. He lifted, he uplifted the marginalized. He was with them in their brokenness. He was there for people. And I think that's what we need to be. We need to be there for people. People we disagree with, people we do with agree with, just be there, be present. Again, five answers. I'm giving you five answers in one.
Yeah, that's good.
Just trying to give all these nuggets of things that this is how I live my life. Yeah. It's what keeps me away from bitterness and toward growth. And but again, it's easy for me to say. I think there's a lot of people who have need accommodations that are being jeopardized right now. So that's. I'm ambulatory, I'll say that. But we need to lead with empathy. We need to come together. And that was the most beautiful thing that I think I have seen in my relationships is in times like this. You know, we come together. We learn how to work together as one and again, meet on the divide.
Well said. Well said. That was not the answer I was expecting. I was expecting something about like watching comedy movies or, you know, something like that.
That but, too. Watch Conan.
Sure.
Watch Conan.
Obviously that too.
Yes, please.
Yes. But that answer was so much better than the one I was thinking I was going to get. And I could not agree with you more. You're so wise. Thank you for that. And unfortunately, my last question for you, I'm going to ask you right now, no pressure, but what is your favorite joke?
Come on. Oh, this is my favorite question.
Yes. I've been waiting for this one.
Boy. Are you ready?
I'm so ready.
All right. I gotta crack my knuckles.
Oh, wow.
I know. Wow. I haven't. It's been
that needed to happen. Wow, that was quite a crack.
I kind of hurt. My index finger is swollen. Weird. All right. You know, I've got to hand it to babies because their little arms can't reach anything.
Ba-dum-bum.
That's great. Hey, that is more of a I can't believe he thinks that's funny type of joke. Like the joke is that is my best joke, and I will always assert that as my best joke anytime anyone asks me a joke.
That was pretty good. I've got to say that that it that kind of it's kind of like spicy food. It creeps up on you, you know.
I gotta ask you. You know, this is a two-way street, and I actually wish I could ask you every question. My promise is my podcast. I will ask you. You ask me. Curated to you. What is your favorite joke?
Oh, so I will tell you, when I was an ambassador for MBA as a little small kiddo, started when I was like 4 and did it until I was about 12. And my mom, in her infinite wisdom, because you would have to show up places and thank people for being there and for their support. And that's not something that comes naturally to a 4, 5, 6 year old child. And so she always primed me with an elephant joke to start out with. And it was my way of warming up the audience. Do you know, the look that you just gave me, do you know elephant jokes?
I don't, but I'm about to learn.
And they are the dumbest jokes you will ever hear in your life, but they're brilliant.
Yeah, I make those.
So I will ask you, I'm trying to decide which one. I have like 80,000 of them. It's a two-part joke. Why do elephants paint their toenails?
Why?
So they can hide in M&M bags. Part two. Have you ever seen an elephant in an M&M bag?
I'm not supposed to say yes. No, I haven't.
You see how good they hide? They're the worst jokes ever. So bad, right?
You know what? Courage.
I tried.
Courage. Me doing the improv thing, it takes courage. You knew the end of that before I did.
Yeah.
And still did it. And to me, I actually respect you twice as if I could respect you more.
It was
twice as much.
It was much more charming coming from a 6-year-old, but they still make me chuckle. So that's what I've got.
No, now it's hitting me. I have like that. Like, you know how you did like the drum sound and then you laughed. Like, to me, it's like, there is, all right.
Yeah. Like I said, dumbest joke you'll ever hear. But Jess, thank you so much for being here. This has been an absolute pleasure. I said at the beginning that you are someone who always makes me smile. You do always make me laugh. And so thank you for that. And thank you for being here. I look forward to watching everything unfold that you're putting out into the world, and sort of tagging along on that journey with you.
Mindy, you're amazing. And even with your last statement, I don't even know how to follow it up. you really encourage me to just be a better person. And I am just honored that you would have me on. So thank you. And one of your book titles, The Truth About Things That Suck.
Yes.
But you don't.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that. And on that note, thank you all for being with us. Thank you for listening. Jess, it will not be the last time. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you for listening. For more information about the guests you heard from today, go check them out at mda.org/podcast. And to learn more about the Muscular Dystrophy Association, the services we provide, how you can get involved, and to subscribe to Quest Magazine or to Quest Newsletter, please go to mda.org/quest. If you enjoyed this episode, we'd be grateful if you'd leave a review. Go ahead and hit that subscribe button so we can keep bringing you great content and maybe share it with a friend or two. Thanks, everyone. Until next time. Go be the light we all need in this world.